Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for November 9th. It's a Tuesday, 2021. That's my compadre, Ian Ferguson.
It's me.
I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, we'll be talking about lots of fun stuff, like what I did this past weekend at Retro World Expo, for example, in beautiful Connecticut. We'll be talking about the 8-Bit Christmas movie trailer. Is it nostalgia bait? Is it? We might have a scumbag stuff of the week, and of course Patreon stuff and voicemails. Ian, how was your weekend?
It was Jesus. What did I do this weekend?
It was Jesus.
It was Jesus.
Went to church.
I didn't do much this weekend. I slept until like 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday.
What?
I was so tired.
What time did you go to bed? Like 6?
I didn't fall asleep until like 6:30 or 7. I tried. But it didn't work. My sleep has been absolutely positively awful.
You shouldn't just lay up in bed. You should make your mind active. I like to like either play Zynga poker, just get my mind off something, watch TV, and then usually your mind just turns off after a while. At least mine does. It'll be like, okay, you're taxing your mind more playing like not League of Legends. Jesus Christ, the fucking great game I play that sponsored me.
Raid Shadow Legends.
Raid Shadow Legends. Raid so that'll Shadow that'll Legends. Put me to sleep.
That's good. Next time you get an advertisement for them, just be like, it's great for going to bed.
Well, no, I mean, it taxes your mind a little bit. You're upgrading your artifacts and stuff. You have to swap out your champions as they're, you know what I mean?
I should probably start another game of Pokemon. One of the portable ones. Any of them, really. Those types of grindy games are pretty good about putting me into a lull where I can maybe fall asleep.
So that's what you did this weekend?
I did fuck all this weekend.
And you saw a movie?
I did see a movie, which you can find out. I saw it last night in Soho. We talk about that on the bonus bits. The bonus bits.
This week is movie reviews. I also talk about Snake Eyes G.I. Joe Origins I saw on the plane. Go to patreon.com/CU podcast. You can check that out there. I went to Retro World Expo. First time in 3 years I went there. Thanks for having me back in Hartford, Connecticut, the insurance capital of the world. When you go into Hartford, it's a strange city because it's all woods up there in Connecticut. But then you get to the city of Hartford, it's all these financial buildings. That's like it's all these big financial buildings. Not a lot of like, I want to say character to it, except like it's financial buildings. This is where big business happens. This is where life insurance gets peddled. And you know, this is where it happens.
In Connecticut.
Connecticut. That's right. You put that C in there. You always forget. It was interesting. It was great. Lots of TurboGrafx games. Whenever you go to the one in Connecticut for some reason, I don't know, because they had more money there. But like, there's always like 5 or 6 vendors that have a good amount of TurboGrafx games.
Huh.
I'm serious. There's always like the one guy I think I told you about that. Like, I think I met the one guy years back. He's like, oh yeah, I have the bone that the guy in the Bond costume was holding back at like CES 1991 or whatever. And he's serious. Like,
how the fuck does that shit not end up in a dump?
How do you not get the costume? If you get the bone, where's the costume? I want that big giant Bond costume. You can probably see pictures online. But anyway, there was like one vendor there who I purchased stuff from a few years ago. I think his name was Mike. Had like, you know, 70% of a TurboGrafx set of a US one, like including the CDs. Like there's people like that are that hardcore into it, that'll have like the OEM new old stock of like the car adapter for the Turbo Express, but it's like this like nondescript box that was probably almost like, I don't know where you'd find that. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
So stuff like that. He's also the person I purchased I finally found the karaoke CD that came with the TurboGrafx CD set.
Nice.
You couldn't find that. So just stuff like that. I bought some Super Nintendo games from Daryl, who follows us and is a good guy. Also saw him at Too Many Games. And of course I got my friend.
Oh, the Buffalo guy.
Buffalo? Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the Buffalo guy. Buffalo, but Buffalo. And then went to my friendlies.
Mm-hmm. What'd you get?
Don't ever say Pat in the future. Remember what happens every time you get the large peanut butter cup sundae. Stick with the medium, my friend. So I got the large peanut butter cup sundae, and boy, I think what did me in was this. There was a pool of the chocolate sauce / peanut butter sauce, like a pool of it on the one side. And I just dove in right in without even trying to mix it.
You got it.
And that hit my stomach, and it was a minor volcanic eruption. I could feel it bubbling up my esophagus. I could feel it coming up, and I was just like, and that was right after we went to the all-you-can-eat sushi, which was good. So I was like, oh, that's a mistake. So they need something in between the medium and large. They need like a 70% of the large. They need like a schmedium. Not just a small medium. They need a marge. They need a marge.
A marge?
In a marge. The problem is there's no small. So like I really need like a true medium because I think the medium is closer to a small. I need a true medium at Friendly's. But thank you, Friendly's, for liking that tweet of me coming back with my psychotic look. And I hung out with I hadn't seen Norm, gaming historian, since August 2019. It was great to see my buddy.
I missed that guy.
Saw Pixel Dan again. Saw my con wifey. Antoinette came Saturday night. She couldn't come to the event. Hung out with Metal Jesus. He came to sushi with us. Good to see Metal Jesus there. And everyone else that comes out. Destiny FOMO, who just texted me before starting, saying, I hope you have an Amico day. They say that's supposed to be a good thing. So, and Destiny gave me the physical product from the Amico. She was right. It's all on the chair there. You can see how I made sure I bubble wrapped them for extra protection because they're so freaking thin. Oh, he's going over to grab it. You don't think
just keep talking.
Okay, so you complain when I get off camera here. So we'll see what happens if I do anything with that. We'll see if I do a proper review or what have you. Be careful, Ian. If you like touch it the wrong way, it'll disintegrate. That car stock is like 1990 Upper Deck stock baseball cards. Yeah, isn't that great?
Impressive.
You're going to show one? You're going to show my favorite, Evel Knievel? Don't put it. No, we're not putting it out. We're not putting that out. But yeah, so thank you, Destiny, for getting me that. It was nice to see Destiny. I hadn't seen her since Long Island a couple years ago. Yeah, that's what I did this weekend.
Neat.
I have one more event I'm going to. Just announced. I'll be at, I don't want to say it correctly. If I say it wrong, it could be weird. SAC Gamers Expo, December 18th and 19th in Sacramento, California. I will be there. We just dotted the I's, crossed the T's. I will be there December 18th and 19th, the weekend before Christmas. So come out to Sacramento. I've never been to Sacramento. May I see a Kings game while I'm there. That's also the weekend, though, that Spider-Man No Way Home comes out. And spoilers have come out. Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. So John Campia, who's one of like the he's like one of those like movie podcasts. He's one of the bigger guys he tweeted out a couple of pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And watermarked them with his name. I'm not sure why he did that, because Disney's on his probably gonna be on his ass. He was forced to delete I think the photos, but they're out there. Delete the tweets. So it's confirmed, spoilers, 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 unless it's wrong, that you will get you are getting a multiverse movie. That's been confirmed. But you're gonna get multiple Spider-Men in that movie, which was, they've done a great job not getting that information out, like, but the leaks have come out here and there. Like, oh, is that picture of Andrew Garfield, is that CG? Is that real or not? Like, it's like a 2-second video clip that looks really good, but could be CG if you hire someone that's good at it. You know, it's like people are questioning themselves, but I think they're going to be in the movie. So there you go. So there you go, Ian. I'm happy about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Get fucking pumped.
Nostalgia hit me. Nostalgia from 2002.
Yep.
Nostalgia from 2014 when we last saw Andrew Garfield. Seven-year nostalgia.
God, 7-year nostalgia. I played some Mario Party this weekend. That's actually kind of what I did more than anything.
But you already went through your weekend. You can't go back. Well, you can talk about it real quick.
Well, Mario Party, the new Mario Party Superstars came out. I picked it up. I don't know why I picked it up, because in general, I really want one of those open.
It's so cheap.
Yeah, I mean, so sealed cheap. Doesn't do anything for me. I wanted to actually be able to gauge the quality of the card stock. You don't need to leave them sealed, Pat. You can open one.
Oh, they're going to get opened.
So I generally don't like Mario Party because I hate playing with it against the computer, and the computer cheats. Finding 4 people to sit down and play Mario Party with is not always the easiest time, and the game is really nothing but luck. That said, I bought it because I wanted to play online. They added online play to it. They actually patched it into Super Mario Party a couple months ago in preparation for this. I always said that I'd try the series again if it had multiplayer, so I did. And it's fun. It's a great way to kill an hour. I like the board selection. I like the mini game choices. I even like the stickers. Stickers are how you communicate online. You can unlock them and you just, you know, it's just little pictures with words so you can communicate in simple ways online. The only problem is like Nintendo constantly does really stupid fucking shit. And one of the things they've done for this game is they put a bonus star in there.
Okay.
Bonus stars being the stars that are like awarded to you after the game's over. A lot of times it's for winning the most mini games or having the most coins or something like that.
Sure.
There's a bonus star that you can only win if you have used the most stickers.
If you use the most stickers.
If you use the most stickers. So that means every once in a while when you sign online, right, you find a game where the people just spam fucking stickers the entire time you play. So it's just noises and images flashing in the upper corner the entire time because they're hoping, against hope, that maybe that'll be one of the bonus stars at the end of the game. It's not always there.
I'm trying to understand this. So they who flashes them? The game flashes them to make
game
it.
Shows you the screen.
Okay.
Four players. Okay. You use a sticker, it shows a picture with a word underneath it, like a picture of a Koopa that says, oh no, or something like that. There is a bonus star you can win for using the most stickers, which leads to people just spamming fucking stickers.
In that one game.
Yeah.
Okay. In that particular game. Okay.
Well, no, I mean, it can be all the games. You don't know if it's a bonus star until the end of the game. So you have a lot of people who just spam stickers the entire time they play an online game in the hopes of maybe that bonus star being one of the stars that's up for grabs at the end of the game.
The special star.
Yeah.
Got it. So then so in the game, it's just you see all these annoying stickers being thrown out?
It's just noises. It's just fucking Mario noises.
It doesn't do anything to the game experience besides annoy you.
Except for annoy the fuck out of you.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's almost like a pay-to-win mechanic, but it's like a play-to-win sort of thing because you got to get more
stickers.
But
it's annoying. Okay. In its normal form, it's kind of fun. The first like four or five games I played, I didn't have anyone like that, and people just used the stickers to communicate. And then I logged in one game, and I figured there'd be trolls who would do it at some point. But yeah, literally just spam them the whole time. I'm like,
so if you get the special star, what do you redeem that for?
It's at the end of the. You don't redeem it for anything. Most stars is how you win the game.
Oh, so you? Why would using the stickers get you the thing to win?
Because there's all sort. Are you not listening to me? There's all sorts of random bonus stars that you can be awarded at the end of the game. You play Mario Party, you go around the board, you use the coins to buy stars to win.
I get that. I know.
At you get the stars, end, you get,
okay.
Then they can award you bonus stars. You don't always get all the bonus stars. It's random things they pick.
Okay.
So sometimes they'll award a star for the person who won the most mini games.
Okay.
So sometimes they'll award a star for the person who moved the most spaces.
So there's no guarantee they're going to get a bonus star for using the most stickers, but
no,
they might get
but
one.
They might. Get
and that one could tilt the game in their balance at the end.
Yes. So they spend the entire hour-long game hitting the button and making the fucking noise while the sticker flashes.
So it's not even guaranteed.
No.
That's ridiculous.
I don't know why Nintendo would do that.
No, I was getting it. I know what the stars do in Mario Party. I'm just wondering, like, was it guaranteed? Was it a special star?
It's just not one. It's one potential
star.
Listen
to you, Ian. I was listening to this.
One potential
bonus
star.
I know the structure of Mario Party. I know the structure.
So it doesn't even always come up. You have no idea if they're going to do it
or not. Gotcha.
Anyways, it's fun to play with friends. The online is really good. If you get disconnected, it'll reconnect you to your game, which is pretty great.
Okay.
Yep, that happened once during a game. Someone got disconnected, and I was like, fuck, it's down to just two of us. And I was like, well, am I going to leave? And then the person reconnected.
So overall, it's been okay, the multiplayer?
Yeah, it's been impressive.
Didn't we read something about they are upgrading their servers or something in the future? Or we're going to Nintendo? They were, like, moving into the 21st century?
Maybe.
I think I saw something about that. Like, they're finally upgrading, like, the back end on something.
We hope. Metal Gear Solid games are getting taken down from digital storefronts.
Why, Ian?
For historical footage usage. So Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3 specifically are the ones that they're saying are being taken down. I think it also says in this list that Metal Gear Solid 1 HD edition is being taken down. And it's for like scenes they use some historical footage of like the Cold War and things like that. With this article on Kotaku shows a good description of it.
It's old, just like footage you see, like on the march, and you go to the movie theater, like what's going on over in Europe, or what's going on. That's all it is.
But for whatever reason, Konami, I guess, did not do those rights in perpetuity.
There's like a rocket launch being shown that was probably like from like the 50s that I guess they didn't get the rights for forever, like late 50s, early 60s. It looks like a Russian cosmonaut. You know, for example, there's shots of like blueprints, I guess. It's like almost like probably could be from propaganda short films or like government films being put out. Yeah, that's what this stuff is. There's one of the Berlin Wall. It looks like East Germany. food getting papers getting handed out with saying crisis. So this is old footage. This is stuff that's fit. John F. Kennedy, I'm looking at here. So I guess, yeah, they didn't get the rights forever. And I didn't know that. I don't know much about the Metal Gear Solid story, but I guess I didn't know how much they fit in real world events into the lore. I know. Yeah. So anyway, so yeah, this is going to affect, like, it looks like every single version of Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3 on PlayStation, Xbox 360, it's coming down, 3DS, good old games, NVIDIA Shield versions of 2 and 3. That's nuts.
They all say, that article says that Konami says it's a temporary takedown. So they obviously have some sort of plan to get them back up, but I don't know what they're going to do. They're just going to remove that. They're just gonna
cut them out. Just do a blank screen.
Do a hand drawn version. I don't know.
I guess it's not. It's not fair use. I'm guessing then. And then I guess the license isn't Creative Commons. Or it's just like, oh, just attribute it. It's weird. Yeah. Like, I'm watching this cutscene. It's a long cutscene, and then it goes to I guess that Solid Snake dropping out of an airplane. There. Like I said, I didn't know nothing about this series. But I'm just surprised at how much they worked real world stuff. It's like this old doctor that worked on this old rocket tech. That's how they built this in. But yeah, there's like a good few minutes of like old footage in there. So grab your old physical copies. Grab your old versions, Ian.
Billions of them.
All billions of them.
Speaking of billions, Sega put Sega's contemplating and putting $1 billion into its Super Game.
$1 billion.
Its Super Game initiative.
Oh my god.
Which I still don't know a whole lot about. Sega's been talking about this Super Game initiative for like the past year. And honestly, it sounds like a lot of hopes and wishes and not a lot of like, we talk a lot about people on this show that have lots of ideas that, don't go anywhere. It's not just enough to have hopes and dreams.
Study the possibility of investing close to $1 billion. Does Sega have $1 billion in cash laying around? I'll just ask that.
I don't know.
Can I look that up? Can someone fact check me on the internet?
But they are destined. So what Japan is saying is, or what Sega is saying is that they are destined to create a great world title. A great world title focused on the pillars of globality, online, community, and the use of IP in the company's annual report. They want to invest up to 100 billion yen. It's nearly a billion US dollars in the next 5 years to achieve the Super Game initiative. So within 5 years, Sega is saying they're going to bring out the video game to end all video games. The Super Game. That's what Sega's saying.
Is this what Microsoft was helping with their team up?
No. Cloud well, stuff? I mean, that was also announced. They can develop titles on the Azure platform. But again, that doesn't sound like much other than marketing to me. It doesn't sound like anything very specific.
Focus on the pillars of globality. Globality is a word. Online community. And use of the IP. What?
So, yeah.
But we don't know what it's going to be.
Nope, we have no idea. It's just a lot of talk. It's a lot of talk.
You know what, Sega? I try to be kind to you folks.
No, you don't. You don't try to be kind to Sega at all.
You're putting on a T for us, at least for me. You're putting on a T. I'm just swinging away. Come on, Sega. Super Game Initiative. That's the name too. The Super Game Initiative.
I would love to see it.
That's like one of those booths you see at E3, like in the early 90s in the corner, or the ones that Sean Baby used to talk about. It's a Super Game that we're selling. We're selling the Super Game.
It's really just an LCD Tetris clone.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's the Super Game.
Super Game 1000.
You get those 1983 Famicom games on there. The Super Game, all in one. It's very super at ultimatenintendo.com. It's very super there. Not even much to play with there. There you can get super RBI baseball stickers, which sold out Saturday afternoon in Connecticut. You can get the NES Super Nintendo.
I mean, there's still plenty of them here.
Yeah, but I mean, they sold out in person. Yeah, there's
how many did you take?
I took like 20. They all sold out. You get the enamel pins, which the CU Podcast pins sold out in Connecticut. We got a bunch more. So we got our goods there. I'm gonna be on Twitch Wednesday night. Ian may show up.
No, I won't.
Twitch.tv/Contra Code, watching 80s, 90s, and 70s commercials. All the hits, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and today.
You've really broadened it.
I did. I had to. I'm running out of 80s commercials. And then I'm on Cameo.com. /PatContry for all your well-wishing needs there.
9-foot joystick?
What?
9-foot joystick?
That's what you're packing, Ian?
Yeah. 9-foot Atari video game joystick claims the record as the world's largest. And then there's a picture of two girls operating the joystick at La Borel Art and Industrial Creation Center, March 31st in Asturias, Spain. So that's where it is. It's Spain.
This is 2007, though, so this isn't new?
2021 is when the article was written. 9-foot tall video game joystick made of wood, rubber, and steel has made it into the Guinness World Records. 2020 is the largest. I suddenly don't care about this article anymore.
Because of the Guinness book?
Because of Guinness, yeah. Because this joystick's been around since 20. Can you
stick to beer? Just stick to beer, Guinness, and we'll be fine. The hokey world record stuff is passe at this point.
We don't need it anymore. We have the internet. We no longer need books of weird facts to fucking...
We know who the oldest people are on Earth, and right now I think it's like 117 years old or 118. It's always women outlive the men.
Is it?
Yeah, the oldest person's always a woman.
I always like the old people who are like, a shot of whiskey is what kept me alive every day.
It's like, yeah, maybe, but it's just genetics. But yeah, because some people say, oh, I know my grandfather lived to be 102 and smoked a pack a day. It's like, yeah, but you're going to usually die if you do that. So it's not a good example.
I swear, it's 3 slices of bacon, 2 pieces of black toast.
Some peanut butter on my face.
Unsweetened coffee. And a shot of whiskey every night at 6:45.
There you go. That's a good life, though.
It is.
It's not a bad life.
I mean, except for the extra black toast. I like my toast extra toasty, but I don't need it black.
No, no. You want it. You want it golden. You want it golden.
I want dark brown.
But you don't like a black. Though. No. Anyway, go back to the joystick, Ian.
I'm done with it. I don't care about it anymore.
Sabotaging the CEO podcast. To have this common pop culture artifact just erupt in the middle of a space and allow people to play something familiar in it.
Yet sounds
familiar,
phallic.
Was exciting. Don't make it weird.
Erupt.
Said Flanagan, an artist who is chair of Dartmouth Film and Media Studies and
the Turgid Eruption.
And the Sherman Fairchild Distinguished Professor in Digital Humanities. That's great. It toured Spain, the UK, and the US. Well, in the National Video Game Museum, they have the giant Pong set up.
Yeah.
Is it the biggest Pong in the world?
Maybe.
It's now in a permanent collection in Germany. Even if I ever get to Germany, I will take a picture handling the 9-foot joystick.
Yeah.
Please, I'll get there.
Please show me your skills.
I am part German, so
you stick jockey.
You want to talk crypto arcade and crypto guy affecting pinball prices? Please don't say no, because otherwise what are we doing?
I literally thought you got rid of this because it was so old. So crypto arcade, crypto guy affecting pinball prices. This goes back to, this is an article about the auction that happened in Banning about 2 months ago. And it just talks a little bit about how the prices went through the roof, something that was brought to our attention at the time.
It was stuff being auctioned from the Museum of Pinball that was closing.
Yes. So something like Tales of the Arabian Nights, which might fetch about $8,000 right now, went for $14,000. Yeah. Back to the Future, which has never been a particularly sought after or expensive pinball machine at this point, is going for much higher than it was when I got into it, but $3,600 to $4,100 at Banning. It also moved for $14,000.
And $14,000 used to be like the upper echelon price. Like those were the most expensive pinball machines.
Right.
They used to be like those most coveted ones would be that. Like the ones that are like that, like the freaking Bally one, that the Cactus Canyon one. Like that's the stuff that was like hard to find that would go for a lot of money usually because it's coveted and it's fun. Something like Back to the Future was never on people's hit list of pinball machines.
No.
Never, for example.
But so, you know, a lot of people question why this was happening, and there's a few reasons. One that I think is a big one is you have new money and new people coming into this. There's an IGN article from the 5th of November on here.
Remember.
And it talks about, one banning bidder, going by the name Blasco, who's actually been in this before. And, you know, this is not his first rodeo. He's bought machines. But one of the consensuses is that people who are just starting to kind of, who have money, people who have made money, especially in cryptocurrencies, who have all this money overnight, money's not important to them.
No, it's almost like it's like imaginary.
The difference between 5K or, you know, 15K for them is the difference between me paying $5 for a sandwich or splurging and paying I was going to say $10 for a sandwich, but even that, it's probably closer to me like paying $8 for a sandwich instead of five. So you have people who come into these auctions, and I don't think it's money laundering or anything like that. It's just new people who have the money, they see what they want, and they want to ensure that they buy it.
Especially since they think everything's an investment. That's probably part of this as well.
I think part of that is too. So they see what they want, and they buy it. And the other benefit to this that we've kind of talked about before, and I'm not even, it's a shame because I'm never going to afford any of these fucking machines if this keeps going up this way. But we've talked about this before. If something goes for that high, and if the last known price is very high and you're the person who buys it, you also have the benefit of, yeah, you paid more for it, but you've also put into the mind's eye, into the public eye that this is what it's worth. You've started a paper trail to make this worth what you paid for it.
Perhaps. The issue, though, with these is that this isn't like video games, because you can buy 100 video games and put them anywhere. You can't buy 100 pinball machines and put them anywhere. You know, that's the difference.
It's true.
They're much harder to ship around, obviously, and to maintain.
I have to be honest. But 10 years ago, I swore to God pinball was going to crash for this exact reason. And it's still going up. I just don't think it's going to. I think people are looking at these things as truly limited at this point, and I think the prices are going to continue to go up on them. I don't know if they'll continue to skyrocket, but I don't think they're magically going to get cheaper.
How are you going to find people that are going to be willing to spend $14,000 on a Back to the Future pinball machine? How many people are out there willing to do that?
Well, I think this person just wants it.
But that's the point. So the next person that has one can see that and go, okay, I'm going to charge $14,000 for mine, and you'll be waiting years potentially, or maybe you have one person who might be interested. Like, you need a sustainable pool of buyers. It goes back to the graded games. You need a sustainable pool of buyers to keep the prices up.
Yes, I know.
If you price out people, there will be a crash. There has to be, because either the people hold on to them forever until they're dead, or they want to sell them and get money. That's it.
I agree. And I mean, at some point, maybe the price is going to come, but I don't think it's going to be anytime soon.
Well, not if you have these idiots that are doing this out there that have money that was created in Candyland, basically. That's what's basically been happening in the past couple of years. Yeah, no. This is the mentality. He topped out on $8,000 purchase of a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles pinball machine and claims to have had a huge bid in computer space, while regarded as the first commercial video arcade machine ever made, before getting outmaneuvered by another patron. I may have missed out on it. That piece might be worth $100,000 in a couple of years. And so that's the mentality that goes into this. So you're willing to spend a ton of money on something because, you know, you're thinking, well, I'm losing money, but not overspending now. That's the mentality around this, or with the graded games. I will spend through the nose on this, and you get into a bidding war with two or three people because they're thinking, wow, I didn't spend $20,000 on that. I lost out in $80,000 because in a couple of years ago. That's the mentality. It's not that I'm overspending now. I'm losing out on potential money down the road. That's what it is. It's pure speculative mindset. It's not collecting at that point. It's not.
The difference, though, is this guy Blasco, that's what this article states, is he's been doing this for a long time. He does collect. He just has the money to buy what he wants.
Sure.
I'm not saying that's everyone in this, but of the people who responded to the article, the one guy who actually did does seem to have some legitimacy in the past as a collector.
No, I get that. But when you start saying things like that, well, it's going to be worth $100,000, you know what you're doing. You are putting it out there into the world. I'm not saying as a collector you shouldn't care about the price of what you're buying, but like if that's the main reason on some of this, you know, it is what it is. And then our buddy Steve Lynn commented saying this could be good overall because people will be valuing pinball more and looking into it. I mean, pinball's been pretty expensive for a while, but if everyone then turns up their old farmhouses and you know, and basements looking for their pinball machines, then it's good if it comes out.
Yeah.
But I think you will get a rush. This might create a rush of people saying, well, I might as well sell now. If I'm going to get $14,000 for a Back to the Future pinball machine that I spent maybe only $1,000 for 10 years ago, then why not do it?
Yeah.
Like, why not?
He also makes a statement that very much is kind of in line with what we said earlier. You know, why would someone do it? The prices were so much higher than we used to. Well, you have to realize that to a lot of people are in a very different economic situation where $10,000 and $20,000 are the same. And it's true. I can't fathom that, but it's true. There are lots of people who are like that.
If you're a millionaire, if you're your net worth on paper is like $15 million, we'll just say you want to buy some pinball machines. Yeah, it doesn't matter if I'm spending $5,000 or $10,000 more for a pinball machine.
Right.
It just doesn't.
You get what you want.
You get what you want. And then there was also in this article about one person, one bidder got over 100.
Yeah.
110 games, one of the bidders did. 110 games. That's like $1 million not $1 million, Pat Math. No, that's $1 million if they're 10,000 each, we'll just say. That's hundreds of thousands of dollars, we'll just say. That's hundreds of thousands of dollars, 100 pinball machines.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of people, they looked at this as convenience. They knew that since it was, you know, it was this collection that the machines were going to be in good shape, it was one-stop shopping. They could go and do everything right there.
It's convenience.
It's convenience. They don't have to go elsewhere.
But I want 100 machines?
But I mean, to a regular person like me, that's like saying, I know that X, Y, or Z might be cheaper at Grocery Outlet, but I'm going to buy everything at Ralph's because it's one stop and I'm done.
Yeah. But of course, there is also a quote here about people getting caught up in the energy and fever. That is a thing. Psychology of bidding more than you would.
I think a lot of people showed. I think when word got out about this auction, a lot of people with big pockets showed up and knew they were going to be spending a lot of money. They knew they were going to be going over.
Or maybe they were just curious and said, I'm going to get into this. Here's my chance. I'm a millionaire. I want to spend it. All right. Well, that's interesting. I just want a couple of pinball machines. I'd be happy with a couple eventually. Good thing I didn't buy that Big Lebowski. Good thing I didn't get it for $10,000.
I'm so glad you fucking pumped the brakes on that.
Because
you were very close to it. And I was like, dude, there's literally no track record to these people. I know the fucking license was cool, but I would not buy a pinball machine from someone who never did.
I got very close to putting that deposit. I don't think I've still played it yet.
I did. It's not great.
It's not great?
No, it's not great.
What a shame. You fucked up the best IP for potentially a pinball machine or one of them. Man. Do you want to unbox one of these as a main topic or no? These physical products.
I just want to fucking feel it, man. But we don't have to unbox it for a main topic.
Okay. That might be a special video where I do that. BLGD. But you want to talk about RFID encryption?
You can.
Real quick.
Yeah, let's do it.
Slopes Game Room interviewed Intellivision CEO Tommy Tallarico. And there's not a huge amount I want to get into. It was two interviews. Part one was like 2 hours about Tommy's historic career and pretending he did a lot of work on Metroid Prime, even though he's not credited, things like that, and blowing himself. And then the second interview was it another 2 hours of talking about the Amico? How can you talk to Tommy? 2 hours and 43 minutes talking about... What a saint, talking to Tommy for like 4 hours, 4 to 5 hours. How can you do that in one day and not want to just jump out a window? Anyway, so I don't want to get into a lot of it, but I'm going to play this quote here when asked about how, you know, the protection on the RFID cards.
I feel like
cards.
The video really needs to be part of this too, because it's just like his face.
I'll show the video. I'll put it there when I play it.
People are asking in the chat, how is it encrypted?
That's a silly question. I'm not going to answer that question. How is it encrypted?
No, but what I'm saying, putting it like this. So basically what they're saying is that, you know, I tap this on my system. There's something in there that's more than just intellivision.com/RFID/biplanes?
Correct.
There's something else. There's something else that's encrypting it.
Correct.
Can you explain what it is that's more than just that URL?
No, I wouldn't say that publicly. No, there's
idiot.
So he's lying.
No trade secrets. No, you're just lying.
So what Slopes Gamer was probably to ask, like, what sort of like encryption protocol is it? Like 128 bit, 64. Right. That's what. Just something in
not
general.
Not stuff that anyone's going to be able to use to hack your system, yeah, no. Tommy.
Like what's the protocol that has this encrypted? Like, what did you come up with? And Tommy, the visual I'll put there for you on the YouTube audience.
He's that's obviously not a tell. I don't know what is.
He doesn't know what to say because now he's trying to claim that there's something else on the RFID that would be encrypted. And the reader reads what's on the card.
Right.
It just reads it. That's what an RFID reader does. It just reads it.
It's not glossing over something else. It's not missing something.
You can't like trick the reader or have the reader do something that a reader doesn't do there. It's a simple, well, you said it's a RFID holds simple, you know, simple codes. That's what they hold.
Yeah. Like usually I think the earlier format of it is like a six digit string. Mm-hmm. And then I think there's one that gets slightly more complicated, but it's very, very small.
So then it was brought up about the Amiibo, how they put protection on the packaging. So you can't just read it through the package. And Tom's response, well, what we're doing you don't need to do that. We basically have it figured out. That's why we didn't put protection on our package. It wasn't necessary. That's what Tommy said. It wasn't necessary because of their tech. He said a lot. He said a lot happens in 10 years with the technology that we haven't figured out. Okay, trust if you want, you can trust. You can trust them. He also said this. I'm paraphrasing because you know people are talking about you know blockchain and NFTs and how it's not eco-friendly because all the huge amount of freaking energy uses for all this stuff. He basically says, well, that was like last year's news about it. He says he basically said their NFT will be eco-friendly. That's what Tommy said without divulging what sort of blockchain tech it's on or like there's no information on it. And this is what it comes down to. Either you have to take the CEO at his word or not. And whether or not you think he's built up the trust or has squandered it the past few years. That's what you have to decide out there on your own. Do you trust this man at this point to be telling you the truth? Yes or no? That's it. I mean, that's all I have to say.
Yeah.
About it.
That's pretty much it. I don't have any faith in
him. Do you trust Tommy Tallarico's track record of what he says coming out of his mouth is the truth at this point or not? Based upon everything we've seen in the past now 3 years.
3 years, yeah.
That's all I'm going to say about that. Physical products, Ian. Remember, they were games at one point. Physical games. Never been done before.
Never been done. Except for DuckTales on the PS3 did it.
DuckTales did a physical product?
There's a case with a collectible pin inside and a code on a card.
So that's literally this. Yes. Except you get a coin instead of a pin.
And you get an RFID card, but it's still a code on a card.
A lenticular card as well. This is now tossing upwards of $1.10 to produce this.
All right. Moving on. If you're anything like us, you want to win that best gift giver ever title this holiday season. We've got a secret source for that. It's Uncommon Goods. Uncommon Goods has just right gifts for all your loves and likes. We're talking moms, dads, teens, in-laws, besties, your one and only. It's not stuff you can find just anywhere. Uncommon Goods has unique and creative gifts, often handmade by independent artists and makers, and they have gift guides to help you match the right gift to the right person. Here's some cool stuff that I recently found, including gourmet peanut butter cups, 15 handmade small batch Belgian chocolate peanut butter cups, peanut butter and jelly ones, Nutella ones. And the cool thing about this site is you can click below and it will tell you about the person who makes the product that they sell. So for in this instance, it's Jessica Tage and it talks about how she makes them in Brooklyn, New York.
I like the 100 movie scratch off poster. It's almost like a bucket list of movies. And then you scratch it off and you reveal the nice piece of artwork after each film you see. There's also the vintage baseball park map glass. There's some great ideas on here. Who knows what holiday shopping will look like this season and the unique gifts that Uncommon Goods can sell out fast. So shop now and get it taken care of early. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. They have the most meaningful out of the ordinary gifts anywhere. Uncommon Goods also offers uncommon experiences. Choose from live online classes in mixology, cooking, flower arranging, embroidery, and more from hand-picked artists and experts. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give $1 back to a nonprofit partner of your choice. That's pretty good. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/CU podcast. That's uncommongoods.com/CU podcast for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
All right, Ian.
Yeah.
8-Bit Christmas.
Yeah.
Is coming soon. Not to theaters. It's a new movie. It's going to be on HBO Max, I believe. And through Warner Brothers Pictures. It's a movie starring Neil Patrick Harris as a father who reminisces over 30 years ago about wanting for Christmas a Nintendo Entertainment System. And it's funny because he originally points out that it happened, you know, 87. Then he says, oh, it was late 80s. A lot of kids got their NES Christmas of 87. That seemed to be like the year. 87 or 80, definitely 88.
Almost 87, 88.
85 was still test market, so like not many people had it. You know, it sold out a lot. You're talking New York, New Jersey, maybe Connecticut. Like, that's about it. Then you go to 86. It gets a nationwide release by that spring. They put it in L.A. as well. But still, it wasn't like it was marketed. It wasn't out there. I remember seeing commercials probably before 87 for the NES. I'm sure they were here and there. Once you get to 87, that's when I think it really started to blow up. The library was a lot bigger. By, remember, in 86, there was still only about, let's see, 10. There was only about 30 or so games in the first couple of years of the NES.
Yeah, it didn't blow up until like 88, 89.
You only had
tons of releases.
You had no third-party games in 85. In 86, you had about 10 third-party games. You had Bandai. You had the first Konami ones. And you had, what was it, Data East. That was it. That was it for 80. They're still starting off, basically. I think I have some up there from the 86. So 87 is when you get dozens of third-party games. You get, you know, Legend of Zelda. You know, you get Kid Icarus coming out and Metroid. You start to really,
right.
You get stuff like, I think it was Rad Racer 87. You really start to see, like, this is what people know the NES for. This is, like, the bigger hits coming out here, besides the black box ones that were out there. So we're now older folks that grew up with the NES. So some of us do have kids and maybe, you know, explain the stories to kids like this. So this movie is basically they even say it's a new Christmas story.
Yeah, it looks like they're going for the Christmas story feeling vibe,
it.
Like the very, very much so with the voiceovers and stuff like that. Even the kids, the way they look with the glasses and shit, it looks very
sure
Christmas story-ish.
So, Ian, what were your main takeaways seeing this? Is it like weird to see like, wow, we're so far older now. This is our childhood. We're like reminiscing back over 30 years on something.
No, I mean, I'm not surprised. I figured this would happen. It always happens in waves. We always get super nostalgic and start seeing, you know, the reemergence of things from various decades past. I'm really not surprised to see this. Video game systems starting in the 80s with the Nintendo going forward have been like the big Christmas gift for a long time. They definitely, you know, kind of replaced the BB gun, you know, and
that we would have got like in the late 30s
stuff
to 40s.
Like that, yeah. You know, that's what they replaced. I don't like nostalgia bait. And I don't have any huge fondness for the 80s. But I do like the original Nintendo and I like Neil Patrick Harris. So I
like Steve Zahn, who plays the father back in the 80s. I love Steve Zahn.
Yeah. So I may watch this at some point. I'm not overly excited about it. I'm not going to get too hung up on it or try to sound overly negative, but I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to give it a go.
I'm going to give it a go. I'm interested because it's interesting. You have all the tropes. You have like the cool kid, or the cool kid that like already has the NES and it's right. Hard to get, you know, it's almost like he's showing off the power glove and just like the wizard. So it's like they're combining different things together. So it's not historically accurate to the years. Just get over it. It's a general NES time period, you know, of late 80s, you know, so that's fine. But you have like the rich kid who has the power glove and there's some historical inaccuracies. Obviously it's like, oh, the NES is sold out everywhere. We can't get it. You could find an NES. By then they were making a ton of them, you know, in at least 87. They were advertised in the circulars, at least in New Jersey, New York, every week. Everyone had it.
Well, I got the impression. So I saw that. That was one of the complaints was that people said that, you know, by that point in time, it wasn't super hard to get. You could go out there and find them. But my understanding was because it showed the kid in a contest, like trying to do like the door-to-door sales stuff to win a Nintendo.
I think that was after in the store, he can't find one at the store, though.
Oh, they're okay. That's what it is. I thought they were going to do like a storyline based on like how the parents just didn't have enough money for it or something like that. That would have made more sense. I think that would have been a bit more realistic.
Steve Zahn says you're not getting the Nintendo. So it's almost like Christmas Story where the mom is like, you're not getting a BB gun.
Gotcha.
That's where it is. They're really following down that line. Because Christmas Story, it's his quest to get the gun and convince his parents to get him the BB gun. And this seems like it's taking more literal, like it's his quest to get a Nintendo. I like how they call everything a Nintendo, though. I think there's something about that where maybe it's like NES is more trademark Nintendo. You can call it the generic name.
Right.
You know, I think they're doing the same thing in the Game Changers movie. It's like, oh, we're looking for the Nintendo
right.
that we had. I just think that's funny. It looks wholesome. It actually looks a little wholesome. I'm not annoyed about something like this. I think this is fine. Like I said, this is what happens. What video game did they show off the kid playing? Did you like that?
Rampage fucking sucks. Awful game.
I guess it was cheap to get the rights to show Rampage. And it's the real NES Rampage. Yeah. Like it wasn't like the arcade one there. So it takes place, it's like around Illinois, Chicago. No, I think it's weird. Like they're using like G.I. Joe walkie talkies in it or something like that. Green walkie talkies in the late 80s would have been like G.I. Joe walkie talkies later on. When I was at the convention this past weekend, you know, you see a lot more of us, a little more gray hair. I grew up with the NES, you know, late 30s to like mid 40s sort of era. And a guy bought the NES book and was talking to his like probably 8-year-old daughter, 7 years old. It's like, hey, honey, this is what I grew up with. And like was talking about these are the games. And it's just like, there you go. That's the circle of life. Like, that's what it is. That's exactly what it is. That's how we were, you know, over 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Except then your parents couldn't tell you about what video game they played because when they were kids, they didn't exist. So we really are the first generation, you know, the younger Gen X, older millennial or Xennial crossover. Like we are the first generation to really grow up with the consoles and have kids. If you don't count, you know, the Atari stuff, like we were like the first one where it was like it was ingrained in the culture like firmly and now it's passed on.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
There will no longer be we're quickly moving into a time period where everyone has experienced video games in some way, shape, or form. Give it another 20 years and there's not going to be a generation above us that doesn't remember video games.
We're not too far away from the elderly having grown up with video games. We're like 15 years away from that, from like the first Atari kids getting older.
I mean, my parents would have been 17 and 16 when the Atari came out.
Sure.
You know, the 2600.
So we're talking about people that were born, we'll just say in the early 70s, that were kids growing up with the Atari. They're 50 now. Give it another 15, 20 years. That's it. There's going to be no one left alive that at least video games didn't exist when they were kids. That's weird to think about.
Like, then we can go see all. Then we can go look at all those talking heads talking about how video games are just a fad, and laugh.
Go back to like the early 80s.
Yeah.
When the crash is like, we're all going to get computers, and that's it. I might talk about the 1930s. I don't know. I don't know how they talked in the early 80s. They didn't talk like this.
They sure didn't.
Yeah, that's it. So let's see. I'm going to go look through the cast. Like Steve Zahn's in it. Neil Patrick Harris, who's great and everything. They filmed it in Toronto. There you go.
Yeah.
In March. And now I'm looking forward. I'm not saying it's going to be the new Christmas Story, though. Like, you know, Christmas Story is now, like, at the time, it was like a forgotten movie when it came out, then it became a classic from being constantly on TV, 24-hour marathons and things like that. It has to be a well-made movie. It has to be smart and wholesome. So I don't think this will supplant the original Christmas Story.
No.
I just don't. Because it's a timeless movie, Christmas Story. But no, I'm looking forward to it. I'm not going to be like people being upset about, it's trying to change our childhood. It's like, no. This is now part of the historical time print of the time is like Nintendo. That's like part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how BB guns were in the 30s and 40s. Did your grandfather have a BB gun or you know, did he?
Maybe. I have no idea.
But BB guns have existed for like over 100 years, I think. So
yeah,
it's interesting. You ever shoot a BB gun? I shot one once.
I did too. I was really unimpressed by it.
It was interesting. I think we set up cans in the backyard.
Yeah, with my friend. And then my buddy sat there and pumped air into it, and then we shot a couple of cans, and I was like, all right.
Was it the CO2 one? It wasn't like a pump one?
It was a pump one.
It was a pump one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. I'm not sure it was a Red Ryder, but I did it. Do you think there would be, would there be a 90s equivalent to the Nintendo? To the NES? If they did a movie like this in like 10, 20 years, would there be an equivalent to this?
I mean, I you couldn't settle upon one.
I think the NES was
because of the market at the time.
It was the video game console. Yeah. It was the one.
You didn't really have other options. You did, it was but only people who were really into it knew about
them. It was the one thing that every kid would have wanted.
Yeah.
After that point, there's no longer, what's the one game console everyone wants?
You can Splinters.
Or you can do like maybe for like Tickle Me Elmo or like the one-off things, but those are fads. That's like Cabbage Patch Kids. Like, yeah, it was big for like a year or two.
Sure.
And then, you know, Cabbage Patch Kids was big for a few years. It was giant. But like, I guess you're right. It was like every 8-year-old would have wanted a Nintendo.
Yeah.
Like that was the one gift, you know? So All right, let's see what happens with that. Hopefully it gets good reviews. Hopefully it gets better tomato meter than Snake Eyes.
Yeah. What was Snake Eyes' tomato meter?
36%.
It's pretty high.
A VPN is a virtual private network, and it's important to keep your internet and browsing history safe and secure. NordVPN, they're great. They offer their service to help you out on your internet and web browsing adventures.
I can access content from over 59 different countries by changing my virtual location with one click using NordVPN. I live in the US, but I could be anywhere in the world virtually and access content from those regions. This means I can watch shows early on UK streaming services. Also, if I'm outside the US, I still have access to all US streaming services. I'll never miss my favorite shows again.
I just traveled a few times the past month, and NordVPN was very helpful going to airports and the hotels and accessing the Wi-Fi there. You just feel safer and more secure knowing that you're masking what you're doing there. And even with the ISPs, it's none of their business what you're doing on the internet. You don't want people or companies selling your browsing history and all stuff. It's none of their business. It's none.
None.
So NordVPN helps with all that. If you want to get on board with NordVPN, it's Cyber Month deal. Go to nordvpn.com/CUPOD or use coupon code CUPOD to get up to 73% off your NordVPN plan plus one bonus month for free. Again, that's nordvpn.com/CUPOD or coupon code CUPOD to get up to 73% off your plan plus one bonus month for free. Get going. Get secure with NordVPN. We like being comfortable in what we wear, especially when we're active. Vuori is a new perspective on performance apparel. It's perfect if you're sick and tired of traditional old workout gear. Everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't feel or look like it. If you want to wear it all the time, you can since it's comfortable. In fact, it might be more comfortable than what you're wearing right now. The clothes are incredibly versatile. It can be used for just about any activity like running, training, swimming, yoga, but also great for lounging or weekend errands. You want to go to the store or see a movie, you won't feel or look out of place.
They've got everything from Ponto board shorts to Stratotech tees. They have Alpine Sherpa jackets. They have everything that you could use for lounging around, going out, being active, or I think a lot of this would be perfect for camping, to be honest with you.
They got cozy gift ideas there. Their joggers look super comfortable. They have the Balboa pant. It's your classic cozy sweatpants, but they're made with ultra soft peach cotton, one of the more relaxed fits. I like, my personal favorite is the Seaside hoodie. It's a classic zip-up hoodie with next-level comfort.
And a nice pocket.
Yeah, nice pocket in front and soft brushed fleece. Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at vuoriclothing.com/CU podcast. That's VUORI clothing.com/CU podcast. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75, and there's free returns. Go to VUORI clothing.com/CU podcast and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Ian, we have a scumbag
seller
of the
week.
Week.
Week. Week.
Who is it this week, Ian?
It is. I am not that far down on the list.
The New York Post.
New York Post. New York Post.
One of the stalwart older New York papers.
Doesn't surprise me that it's the scumbag seller because it's a scummy paper. It's a scummy paper that rarely runs. I mean, it's just one step above a fucking tabloid.
How is that? Is Daily News above in the echelon? Is it Daily News slightly above?
I think Daily
above?
News is below the Post.
Daily News is below the Post?
I think.
Okay.
I think. I don't know. The Post is not good, though.
The Post and the News, I thought were like both the working man's newspaper.
Anyway, we've sort of talked about this before. Basically, the New York Post on Twitter pumped out an ad. Relive childhood with a $36 8-bit gaming console. 620 games built in. I am sure this is 100% legitimate, up and up, and 100% licensed and ready to go. But
that all-in-one console even looks familiar. What does that look like?
It looks like a Nintendo Mini.
Looks like an NES Classic Edition. That's sure, interesting.
It sure does.
It sure does.
So this is, and really, the scumbag seller is not just the New York Post, but we need to call out Stack Commerce.
Yes.
Stack Commerce is the company. I think we mentioned this with, I think it was like Kotaku or Joystick, or Joystick is so old, or Polygon.
Joystick's been gone for 10 years.
Yeah.
Holy shit, Ian. Game Spy.
Shows you how I really don't go to video game websites anymore. Except
it was
for this
it was
podcast.
One of them. Might have been Polygon or one of them that were. I don't want to. Okay, I won't disparage anyone, but there was one of these sites that had like a Stack Commerce site selling a bootleg NES Classic or one of these things that's like illegal ROMs on an illegal product.
So Stack Commerce appears. I'm assuming that they're kind of like an ad insertion.
Yeah, commerce platform for publishers and brands. That's how they talk about themselves.
So this is when you see like weird ads that totally come out of left field.
Have
like
nothing to do with the rest of
on your favorite blogs. That's where they're likely coming from is Stack Commerce. Anything that you see shady in there, Stack Commerce. And Stack Commerce is apparent. How many times can I say Stack Commerce in 5 minutes? They're not vetting the stuff that they're selling.
No. They made, by the way, they made $80 million of revenue in 2020. So they were sold to someone. So they make money doing this shit. These like fake editorials, basically. Editorials?
Advertorials.
Advertorials.
That's what they're called,
Fueling product discovery. Stack is a product discovery platform. We partner with 1,000 plus publishers and 5,000 plus brands to help real people discover products and brands they love every day. So they probably get hired by, all right, push our product or a suite of projects, and you reach out, and that's what happens. And they get a cut of them. Or excuse me, New York Post would get a cut of this potentially. Or they just get paid money to place the advertorial on the site. The problem is these should be new, like real outlets that should know better of pushing illegal products.
Yeah.
That's the thing, New York Post. You're journalists.
We can't be the only people who have looked at this and been like, this doesn't seem legit.
I'm going to read some of this. If you're a gamer or have a gamer in your life, there's nothing that brings up the nostalgia of childhood quite like a retro gaming console. Long afternoons sat before a rear projection TV. How many of us had a rear projection TV? What? Is that to me like a CRT? Is that what they mean? Rear projection?
I think rear projection was like the old like big style TV,
big the big
suffered
screens?
From like burning all
or
the
do
time.
They mismean CRT is that, anyway trying to beat the difficult vault or get past a thorny level or trying to be a particularly difficult boss or complete a favorite game of them on the most difficult level blah blah blah. Being able to relive those classic console experiences in the present day, because you can't do that, is a worthwhile way to spend an afternoon. Bring back those childhood gaming memories with the mini game entertainment system. No reference to Nintendo at all.
No.
Or the NES. 620 built-in classic games. AV output, Ian. That's quality. AV output.
Who doesn't love some AV output?
In 2021. Currently available for $36. A very affordable price.
6 cents per game, they tell you at the bottom.
Holy shit.
Six whole cents.
There's two varieties. You can upgrade to $45, Ian, for the HDMI output. Who the hell would want the AV output in this day and age? Plus, you're going to get lag on an LCD TV with AV.
I used to see so many people used to try be like call us at Luna and be like, "Oh, do you guys buy the NES Classics?" No.
Oh, here's the first reference.
And they come in anyways. It's always the AV out ones. They're like, "Oh, we thought this was HDMI." I'm like, "No, you bought a bootleg."
Here you go. Designed to run in the classic style of gaming systems like the NES and the Atari 7800. That's so weird.
Ah, yes,
the whole generation of kids who had that 7800. You know, the 8-bit Christmas is really about the 7800. All those kids in 87 wanted to get the 7800. It's equipped with two controllers, blah, 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 blah. So this is, again, on a weird advertisement here with auto-running fucking music. You motherfuckers. Now I got to close it. Damn you, New York Post. They should know better, obviously. It's not vetted, the products. It's some AliExpress fucking $10 probably thing that's being sold via Stack Commerce there. It's discovery platforms for publishers, for brands. So, you want to look at some of the Twitter responses? I wish there was comments on the site. I'm sure the responses on Twitter there were very nice about this. I'm sure everyone was really
digging. Lost internet, but yes, they were great.
There's a My Little Pony hoof on the head, like I can't believe this. I thought you guys were going to link to some shady storefront on AliExpress, and it turns out no, it's just on your shady storefront.
Yeah.
Do you not realize how hungry Nintendo is when it comes to lawsuits? Extra sued. It's like a meme picture with SpongeBob.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm sure at Nintendo would love to hear how you guys are promoting a bootleg NES. One person said, Lucy said, I have this. It's great. Oh, there you go.
Thanks, Lucy.
There's a GIF of AVGN looking all mean. the Twitter support. This post linking to illegal goods. Remove it. The Rock lowering his sunglasses. Looking. God, the internet, Twitter's great. Nintendo currently calling all their lawyers. It's garbage. Save your money. I couldn't stand the graphics and put it away after 30 minutes. So Brian just doesn't like 8-bit games.
Fuck off, Brian.
Yeah, fuck off, Brian. We don't need you here. I remember this one. I bought an NES Classic from Wish, and it just turned out to be this crap. So you move into shilling for bootleg consoles with likely stolen games. Classy. Oh, at Nintendo of America. Wait, that's illegal, bruh. and more.
Yeah.
It's bad.
It's dumb. Stack Commerce has got to stop selling those things.
No, I'm sure Stack Commerce sells things that are legit. This is fine. MC Chase Production says, hey guys, I'll get it because in caps, I want to make sure you never sell this god-awful console ever again, mainly because you are selling a console with illegal ROMs built in the console itself. What a fucking waste. And there's more, but that's, you get the point. You get the point with that.
How embarrassing must it be to wake up and have that inserted? I mean, they obviously don't know or care. They're not doing anything. I would imagine that joystick or whoever we mentioned probably.
Was it joystick?
Yeah, joystick.
With a Q.
It was 1UP.com.
Game Spy.
It was Magic Box.
Was that really a real one?
Magic Box was my favorite website because it was just news and no editorializing.
Really?
It was literally just release dates. It was mostly based
like
on
good old newsy.
It was import games mostly too, but it was literally just like hard data
just
in terms
facts.
Of releases, stuff like that. Yeah, I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, they probably like quietly went in there like, hey, Stack Commerce, you can't do that anymore.
It's still up though. The tweet's still up in the. They got
paid their money. No, I'm talking about the old the video game site. Probably looked at it and was like, "We have to fix this." New York Post, on the other hand, probably does not give a shit.
Is there? I'm trying to see. There has to be a disclosure that this is like an ad partner on their page. Here he goes. Discover startup services, products, and more from our partner, Stack Commerce. New York Post may be compensated and/or receive an affiliate commission if you buy through our links. I guarantee you there's compensation and or commission going on here. It's not like this is newsworthy. It's not like the hardworking folks of the New York Post are investigating and writing up this story.
Their fucking hat on that says press, the sound of typewriters yes. clacking in the background.
Herm Burford, Out of Control News. I would love to talk to the author of the article and be like, I understand that the Atari, you Googled 7800 and saw that's technically 8-bit, but that's not a memory any of us have.
Yeah.
There's no one.
You're not getting anyone's nostalgia.
No, the 7800 was not probably being sold by the time you got into the late 80s. They were selling the junior Atari because they had a billion boards laying around and stuck them into like a smaller case.
Right.
That's probably what happened to that. Right. Well, the New York Post is the scumbag show of the week. I guess we'll see if like the New York Times will sell like a bootleg Super Nintendo classic.
Yeah.
All right, Ian.
Yeah.
We have a Patreon, don't we?
We do. Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go. A little bit of money. A little bit of money exchanges hands. In a dark alley. You get weekly writings. I got to do one today or tomorrow. We do
exclusive podcasts now.
Exclusive podcasts. You can get a little bit of honey.
A little bit of honey?
You can get a little bit of honey.
Honey on your podcast waffle?
Shit, we do the
hangout,
full video podcast, Man. We do a hangout, and we do Q and A polls. We do a poll.
Oh my god, Ian.
We do a poll.
Okay. All right, so this is this week in second place. Are sealed game collectors being mistreated at 20%? I'm surprised that wasn't closer. I thought that would have been a good one. Hint, it's a good one next week. Wink, wink, to vote on. Trying to bias the polling. And in first place, what if we had one last 2D console generation instead of the PS1/N64 and in the mid 90s, what would gaming would have looked like? What would have happened? How would have looked at games? This is an interesting question.
So I'm not sure exactly. Obviously, because it didn't happen, we can't say. An extra generation of 2D gaming, I would have loved to have seen how the graphics evolved with sprite technology. And basically at the time, I would love to see what that would have looked like at the time to see what that next evolution of sprite graphics above the Super Nintendo would have been.
So flat 2D.
Yeah. How would that have been realized? Evolution. Because we're just asking for another, generation. We weren't at HDTVs or anything yet.
No. So same CRTs.
So it'd be the same CRTs, but we would have had, you know, more powerful systems that could have pushed more sprites on screen. So I would have loved to have seen what that would have looked like instead of, you know, jumping straight into polygons. You look at a lot of those old PlayStation 1 games, and even, I think, more so some of those N64 games, and it's all serviceable, but they definitely jumped into making 3D games like right when it became viable.
Sure. Almost too soon.
Almost too soon, because they wanted to push the technology because it had a wow factor to it. And I think they wanted to show people that this is the future, and it managed to catch on through the PlayStation and the N64. But if you go back, a lot of those games, it's hard to play some of those games. You look at screenshots from some of those games today, especially like some of the IDOS games like Ninja or something like that. And it's hard to look at a screenshot and tell what the fuck's going on. With a lot of 2D games, it's very easy to look at the screenshot and get a rough idea of what kind of game it is or what's happening. A lot of those early 3D game screenshots just looked like a mess of polygons and color. I just don't know what's happening.
Sure. Like Battle Arena Toshiden?
Yeah. But I do think we kind of do have a glimpse of what it would have been like somewhat, and that's with these modern systems. They've gotten extremely powerful, and therefore the cost of game development has jumped up astronomically. It's why we don't see as many AAA games coming out per platform anymore as we did, say, on like the PlayStation 2, and then the jump from PS2 to PS3. There was a huge drop-off in games released from Generation 7, which would have been the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360, to Generation 8, which is PS4 and Xbox One. And now what we have is we have this upswelling of indie, whether they're indie or not, actually indie game developers and games coming out that have returned to the 2D form or to a low polygon visual style, because it's one, you can do aesthetically great things with that if you know how to. But two, it's cheaper. So now we're getting all of these 2D games again. We spent a couple of generations, especially the PlayStation 1 and N64 generation, but to a large degree, a good chunk of the generation after, where 2D games were shunned. People didn't want to see them. You know, there was one of the most
down with sprite art for some reason.
Yeah, one of the most classic examples of how wrong people at the time got it was there's a comparison from an old Game Pro or something where they're showing like a screenshot from Castlevania 64 and then a screenshot from Symphony of the Night, and they're talking about how the N64 game is so much more mature and 3D. Ooh. and the, you know, Symphony of the Night looks kiddie and like, you know, ridiculous.
What a cold take.
What a fucking ice cold take that is. Ooh. Because now you look at Castlevania 64 and it's barely something anyone remembers, maybe as a ooh, that's not good, or a joke. But no one.
So they were leaning on, oh, the new tech means it's better versus the aesthetically it looks like crap, garbage compared to the sprites.
Whereas Symphony of the Night has a spot on the top 100, I would say top 50, if not top 25, best video games list for all time.
Is it? Is that high?
It's very good. I mean, okay. I would say that game will be on the top 100 lists for forever and ever. I mean, it's a fantastic game. No one's going to go out of their way to play Castlevania 64.
Well, unless you're doing a certain guidebook. Absolutely. Yeah.
So bringing it back around, I think we are finally getting to see that there are now all these people who want to make games. It's way too expensive to make them at this AAA level. And you have people returning back to these old, the sprite graphics, 2D graphics. And you're starting to see what that might have looked like.
Well, we kind of have a feel of what it would look like in terms of these games that are coming out. They're like 2.5D almost.
2.5D, sure.
That are, you know, like these games, it was the two that look almost exactly the same in terms of aesthetic. Like Octopath Traveler, Triangle, what is it, Triangle Strategy?
Yeah, they're made by the same company. Oh, yeah. And then they're also doing the remake of Dragon Quest III in the same style.
So they're like more advanced looking 16-bit graphics in terms of the characters, but they're shaded more, they're more detailed, but they're still in the 16-bit universe, we'll just say.
Sure.
Like if you want to say that's 32-bit, you know, sprite art. So that if another console came out, we'll just say the Super Nintendo, we'll just say, maybe it would look more closer to that, where it's just like it's a lot more detailed on these sprites than we saw before. But aesthetically, it's the next evolution from NES to Super to whatever this is going to be. That's when I look at it, that's what I see. that's sort of like the final frontier of like that sprite work. That's about as best you can do with like 2D flat graphics.
Sure.
They're more shaded. There's more detail. There's a little more shadow involved. It's just a little more detail. That's the only thing I can say. I don't think stuff like did the Sega Saturn have any like 2D games that got close to look like this, or no, they look more like 16-bit.
No, there's a lot of good looking 2D stuff on the Saturn. Something like Astal looks phenomenal.
But is it still like, is it closer to like how like Octopath Traveler looks, or is it more closer to just like a Super Nintendo game?
No, it's going to be closer. I mean, it's honestly, the example that I'm going to use again is Symphony of the Night. Symphony of the Night is probably a great example because that was a 2D game on the next generation of system, whereas it's 2D sprites, but you can obviously tell there's some 3D stuff going on in the background.
Gotcha.
Whether it's pre-rendered, and I'm sure it's pre-rendered, but you start to use the pre-rendered sprites and graphics and stuff
like
that.
You build it in, so it's a little bit, you can do a little bit more
right
with it. Okay, exactly. Yeah, I'm looking at it, yeah. I've never played through Symphony of the Night. I got
to
play that.
Jeez, you really need to play that one.
I think I own it on PlayStation. I think I do. I think that's where we would have went.
Mm-hmm.
Those games, it would have been just like, okay, they look a lot cleaner, a little bit more realistic than even the Super. Not the Super and Genesis, they don't look bad. A lot of those games look gorgeous, obviously. But that would have been the next evolution, we'll just say. In terms of we don't do a lot of what ifs. It's like putting off the future. It's like you still had, at the time, you had 3D gaming on the computer. It was dominant.
Sure.
That's why the computers got huge in the mid to early 90s, because it was doing stuff you could not do on a console.
Namely first person shooters.
Yeah.
And
3D games in general. That you had. That
sure, like Phantasmagoria when it came out was big because of all the FMV, but it also had 3D.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the settings were 3D.
Yeah. Consoles got overtaken in the early 90s by PCs in terms of the technology and what type of games you can do. It swapped from the 80s. It totally just swapped over once you got to CD-ROM technology and like full Sound Blaster cards and 3D games. Like, it totally just switched over in the early 90s. So, of course, it would eventually still come to the consoles. It just would have obviously been delayed. Maybe that delay would have been good, because then we would have went through the awkward, or got through most of the awkward early polygonal stuff, like
right.
You said. We would have got a little more advanced. By the time we get to the late 90s, especially on computers, we got to the point where something like Unreal looked incredibly more advanced than something like on an N64 did. It was like at least a half step up to a full step up. Maybe that would have been the first N64 console. It would have been like, okay, this is a lot more good looking even than a standard N64 game. Maybe that's where we would have went. Like, look at Unreal versus Castlevania 64. Like, the details is a step above. Maybe that's where we would have got there. Maybe that's what would have happened. Or like Quake. You know what I mean? Like, even though there was Quake on N64, it's different on the PC.
Different. Yeah.
It's different. So it's a little more, you know, a little smoothed out a little bit.
Yes.
We had our Voodoo FX cards and our early ATI cards. I was always Team ATI, by the way. Always Team ATI. That worked out. They're still kicking.
Yeah, they are.
They're still kicking. Voodoo FX, not so much.
Not so much.
Not so much Voodoo. I got to get in arguments in college. It was almost like Super Nintendo versus Genesis. It was Voodoo FX versus ATI. That happened. Those were arguments we had like 98, 99. You remember those?
No.
You didn't? Okay. Well, I won. I won, Rocco. I won. We have voicemails to listen to, don't we, Ian?
We do.
Go to anchor.fm/the CU podcast if you want to listen to voicemails, what you're doing right now. And try to keep it short and sweet, and try to make us laugh, too. That's always fun. Here's the first one.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Liz from Rochester, New York. This question is for Pat. Pat, did you ever consider that UFOs are just history classes from the future coming back to observe the past?
No, I haven't. I have not. I have not thought about that.
I have not put that one through the brain.
on our paranormal podcast, I have not thought about that.
You're tripping.
I guess I would say... why they look so much different than us at that point? Were we like a million years into the future of evolution at that point?
Super asparagus.
Super greens.
Super asparagus, super greens. Centuries of super
greens. I like the first. It's like, right about now. The Funk Soul Brother. Speaking of late 90s. Next one here.
Awful song.
Hey, Pat and Ian. Dakota calling in here for the first time from Colorado. I love listening to the show. My question for both of you is, when it comes to playing a game at home, what game do you play best? So whether it be for a high score or a fast completion time or competition against another player or a computer player, what game are you totally confident that you'd be number one at outside of an event that was like professional or competitive or something like that? Mine is hands down Mario Kart 64, and I'm curious to hear what your guys' are. Thanks and stay safe.
What's one game that you would just dominate? You know,
so we've gone through this a little bit before, but Fire Pro Wrestling, it's the only game I'm good at, and I could probably take on just about anyone.
I never played you with that.
Nope.
We should do that. That'd be a struggle, just like a pro wrestling struggle. We're always neck and neck.
Yeah, I'm real good at Fire Pro.
I want to take you on. What's fun about playing Fire Pro against someone is that it's great because you have to create like a wrestling match.
You do. I mean, like Fire Pro Wrestling World will give you a grade based. I mean, if you go in there and you just fucking dominate,
you have to treat it like a real sports entertainment.
You will get a, I mean, you'll win, but you'll get a low rating on your win.
Yeah.
The goal is to win and get a high rating.
So, Street Fighter games I'm good at. So Street Fighter is one that I would dominate at usually. And then other multiplayer that I'd be great at. Tecmo Bowl or Tecmo Super Bowl, I'm usually pretty good at.
Mm.
Unless I'm coaching, and then against Ian, and then there's 18 fumbles.
Yeah, that's right.
And then maybe ice hockey. I rumors that I'm pretty good at ice hockey.
Yeah, he might be good at that one. He might rabbit.
Hey, what's up, Pat and Ian? I know before this whole situation with WADA and the Carl Jobst, whatever video, WADA really didn't have a good name, right? I know at least in the amongst collectors, everyone kind of knew that they were shady, that there was some backdoor stuff going on. What do you think it would take to garnish some faith in WADA as an organization and to kind of look past what we've seen thus far? Or do you think it's impossible? I figured it was certainly worthwhile to ask. Thanks a lot, guys.
Population reports,
but I think they might be too late. They looked at it as a kind of like the boogeyman by a lot of too many games. People were like making fun, like walking around saying, "Oh, there's WADA over there," or actually, no, they weren't there. They're doing that for Heritage Auctions, but they were having that comment for WADA games.
You said WADA,
they backed out. They backed out. Games. But they because there was about five or six vendors. By the way, at there was almost no WADA graded games, almost none. In Connecticut, at Richfield Expo, there was a lot of too many games. It's interesting. But they were like, people were snickering. I was walking around, they were snickering. Oh, the Heritage Auction game. So, like, among the regular people, the damage has been done potentially.
Sure.
Population reports would be big, but they also got to come clean and say this behavior by people involved in our company was wrong. It'll not happen again. We had a guy involved that was selling games on the side that were graded that should not have been allowed by our own rules.
Yeah.
They should have said that's what they would have needed. At least to me.
Yeah, I feel like that. And like I said, population reports, I think, would be a good faith start. Yeah.
A start, but I don't think it's going to,
Hey, Pat and Ian. My name is Jerry. First time.
Jerry!
You guys, a few months back, actually discussed my article on Howard Scott Warshaw that was in Wired a few months back.
Good job, Jerry.
So thanks for that. My question is, with Halloween rapidly approaching, what's the chance that the Link costume behind Ian there will be broken out of the box and be worn on a very special Halloween episode
of
the CU podcast?
Well,
I think the world,
that's rough,
the world
Jerry.
Needs right now, Pat.
So the world needs Ian's face compressed in that vinyl suit.
And, keep on keeping on. Love the podcast. Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry. Good job with the article.
Yeah, that was a good one. No, I will never wear that costume. It's terrifying.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. It's Zach in Ottawa, Ontario.
Ottawa.
Calling. Love the show. A long time ago, you guys were both mentioning consoles that you thought were overrated, and you both said you sort of thought so with the Neo Geo. What I'm wondering is, how come? Is it the price, or... do you just think the games aren't as good as people claim? I might argue with that, but thank you for the show, and take care.
Did we ever say that?
So I don't think we ever said the Neo Geo was overrated. The only thing I could think of I've ever maybe said, I mean, I'm a huge SNK fan. Like, that's known.
Overrated. I mean, it's...
And I don't think it's overrated. The only thing I can think of that I've ever said negatively about it is at this point... unless you have a shitload of money, it's not worth getting into collecting Neo Geo.
Oh, absolutely, you can't.
Especially because the library is relatively small, and SNK and Hamster and other companies have gone above and beyond getting those games on compilations, on digital storefronts. I mean, most of the very good games on the Neo Geo you can get in compilations or for $7.99 through individual purchases. I would never disparage the quality of the games coming from SNK. I think this is a case of totally misunderstanding.
It's not worth the money to get to buy the real stuff.
Maybe, and I understand collecting expensive thing, but Neo Geo stuff, like AES stuff, is just fucking insane. And I wouldn't get into collecting it for fear of bootlegs on the really expensive stuff. I would never recommend collecting Neo Geo stuff. But I love SNK games. I love what that system produced, and I love the MVS. So I have no idea where we're getting the overrated.
I think it's rated. It's weird.
I thought you were going to say N64 or Super Nintendo, because whenever that question comes up, I always say it's the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, I mean, the games are fun. They're fine. It's not a pretentious system. It's just expensive.
Yeah.
You know,
but I mean, it's loaded full of great fighters, good shooters.
It's an arcade system, literally.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So yeah, I don't know where that comes from. Next one.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. My name is Patrick from Elgin, Illinois. My question is for Pat.
Oh.
Hey, Pat. A couple of weeks ago, you mentioned you were watching X-Files, and I was wondering which season was your favorite. Mine was season 2 because I felt that's when the show really came into its own. Love the podcast, and don't forget, the truth is out there.
It is.
I do love season 2.
I'm on season 5 now, and it's starting to look a little weird in season 5. It's like, they're starting to do a little too much now. They're spending too much. Season 2 is out. Season 1's outstanding.
Yeah.
There's been like 2 clunkers in all of season 1, even 2 or 3. And season 2, though, by then, that was like the hottest show on TV, like season 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, seasons 1 through 3 are all fantastic.
Yeah. 4 I thought was pretty good. Once you get to 5, I'm like, okay, they're starting not to tie up anything. That's when people probably start to have issues.
Right.
The movie came out after season 5, I believe. And that's when it's like they should have answered questions. And the problem was the movie, they didn't.
Right. Just a long episode.
5 should have been the conclusion to the first fucking seasons, and they didn't do it.
Right.
Chris Carter, I love you for creating the show, but at some point, you almost had to have someone say, Chris, we gotta tie up these story ends. It's going on for 5-6 fucking years now.
Yeah.
You can have maybe one giant story but you can't just keep expanding the mythos without answering something. I got out of it after like season 6.
No, I did too. I'm one of those people who watched, I think I watched seasons 1 through 4 and maybe got halfway through 5. I haven't watched the episodes they've done after either.
They're good. The standalones are good.
Yeah.
The classic Monster of the Weeks are good. Again,
is that how they did the new episodes?
Oh, yeah. Well, the first season that came back, it was only 6 episodes. You'd had like two like alien eccentric ones or government, and the rest were standalones.
Oh,
so
nice.
It's like the standalones are people's favorites. Yeah. They're great.
Yeah.
Because they're like procedurals, but they're monsters. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I liked that.
Oh, they were good. But they didn't end on a satisfying note. It was like they left it open-ended the last episodes. They thought they were going to come back, even though Julian Anderson said, I'm not coming back. This is it. Chris Carter, you should have believed her. You should have ended it after the second. You're lucky you got a revival season at all, or two seasons with that. I think they should just do like a movie to finish it up.
Do you trust them at this point to actually finish it?
I think Chris realizes he has to. The actual second movie that came out, I want to believe, was a standalone like episode type of movie.
Mm.
So you go watch that. It's fine. It wasn't great, but at least it was a standalone monster sort of tale.
Pat, Ian, what's up? Josh again with my like 10th question.
Hey, Josh.
Have you guys ever had any kind of weird like fan encounters? Anybody ever come up to you and like just acted weird, or any nice encounter, somebody wanted a picture, or maybe wanted to shake your hand at the grocery store? Thanks.
No nice encounters ever. No, 99.9% of the encounters are nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've had maybe a handful of bad experiences in 10 years.
Yeah, I haven't had many bad experiences.
Maybe a handful.
No, most of the time it's nice. Most of the time it's just people who are like, hey, I actually, first time in like a while, I was standing in line at the grocery store. And the dude in front of me turns around and looks at me, and turns around and looks at me again, and goes, do you do a podcast? And I was like,
oh, really? Locally?
Yeah.
Okay.
Up at Barron's.
Okay.
And I was like, yeah. And we chatted for a bit. But most of the time, it's very nice people who realize that you're a person who has their own life and you're doing things. And they just want to say hey and shake your hand. I get a lot of people at like Comic-Con and stuff like that who I'll walk by and they'll look at me. And just let's be like, hey, and, you know, that's...
Oh, they're treating you like a Hollywood celebrity where you don't want to bother
them. They're just like, hey, and I mean, you can say hi. I don't mind. But yeah, I mean, most of these people aren't going to try to take up all of your time. There have been some bad instances, and I'm not going to dwell on them.
No, I had one bad instance that happened at Retropalooza, but like before that, I couldn't tell you when the last one was before that. It must have been years where like it was like a bad experience where someone that was didn't know social boundaries and didn't know, you know, basically trying almost to like troll in person. You can tell there was something wrong.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. But no, I was actually, the funny thing is at the airport when you get noticed, people, not that you're a celebrity, but like they must see people like, so security be like, yeah, like what you do. Like while they're in TSA, that's happened to me a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're Pat, right? So they're not allowed to like talk or.
One of the guys who checks IDs, you know,
the right before you
he was like, recognized me.
Because like, they got to be professional.
Yep.
The last time that happened was, actually was at coming back from Retropalooza in Texas. It wasn't a TSA worker. It was one of the restaurant employees, one of the waiters. Even there being professional, like, hey, Pat, like your stuff. And just like, it didn't talk to me again. That was it. I was like, oh, hey. I was like, hey, that was it. That was it. Obviously, it depends on the location, like swap meet or it's happened on the streets. Frank's got recognized randomly by people. You know, Frank kind of stands out.
Patriots reporter Tom Curran delivered us a story this week about Tom Brady's rookie year in New England when him and his housemates would play Tecmo Bowl tournaments to decide who was Tecmo King of the House. And when he would lose, Brady would either throw the controller and dent the wall or stomp on the ground to make the game short out. Who knew Tom Brady was a controller thrower? Peace, fellas.
I like that message. It literally just goes right.
It's a news story.
Yeah.
Thank you, Samuel. Anytime. That was like good. The perfect. Thank you. That was perfect. But he's very competitive. I can picture him. I'm like that. I'm very competitive. I don't throw controllers though. But you sure?
What a little baby!
I know there's been Deflategate, and was there a controller looking gate?
What a little babby!
You can tell he's a baby deep down.
Fucking Brady. Babby.
Next one.
Skip. Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Connor calling from Pork Roll City.
Yeah.
First time, long time. Pork Roll City. I recently got a tattoo of a Friendly's Monster Mash Sundae.
Wow.
On my upper thigh. I'll send you a picture if you want to see it. I just didn't want to unsolicited send you a picture of my body.
Thank you.
If you guys were to get a tattoo of a Northeastern food delicacy, like a Friendly Sundae, what would it be and why? I'm asking because I'm curious and I need more ideas for tattoos. All right. Thanks, guys.
I got to ask you, are you getting free Friendly's ice cream because of the tattoo? Like, are you just doing it willy-nilly? Because there used to be those ones that way. Like, you get a tattoo of a taco, you get a free food or whatever. And I think I read a story like someone got like hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of food over the years.
I recently read a story about a taco chain up in, I think it was San Francisco, that did that. And it was like, you could get one meal a week.
That's probably what I'm referencing.
You could get one dinner a week if you got the tattoo. And they like, I think like 15 people over the course of it being open and it's no longer open did it. And, they kind of formed like a friend group.
And the
restaurant that opened after the old Mexican place sold its location still honors the tattoo for a one free meal. The people who sold the restaurant made sure it was in the contract that people who had the tattoo could still get one free meal at whatever restaurant.
Was it a Mexican place that opened up?
I think it's South American. I think they do like pupusas and stuff like that, but still like good food.
Okay.
I after reading that article, I actually said to myself, this isn't a Northeast one, but I would get the Nico's chicken tattooed on my arm for a free burrito a week. One burrito a week.
So you're talking, that's like $350 a year, we'll just say. That's all. That's what it takes.
That's what it would take. So I would do that.
Would you ask them if they would honor that? Would you be a man enough to get that tattoo if you went up to say, if I'll do
it? If they agreed, I'd probably do that. I don't know if it'd be on my arm, but it'd be somewhere.
Would you ask them now? Would you?
I'd put it right here on my calf, probably.
Yeah, but then that's not really advertising for them.
Well, that's where the tattoo plate. Most of the people got the tattoo stuff
really?
Done. They got on their calves. Or
you got to ask them now, Ian.
Yeah, I'd think about it.
I think you got to ask them.
Northeast, big plate of saucy wings, or maybe
big plate,
maybe the Mighty Taco logo.
I got to see the Monster Mash Sunday is a variant of the witch one, but it looks more like Yoda. It's got two instead of having the cone. That's not the teller. I mean, they're all eyes of like a Reese's Pieces. It has the ears of like a bat, peanut butter cups cut in half.
Oh, very nice. I like
and
that.
They go mint chocolate chip. They do a green ice cream.
Ooh.
So they say Friendly's has a cover for every seasonal variety.
They sure as fuck do. That's a good Sunday.
But I'm trying to think. Now I'm curious. Is your tattoo, sir? Is it just the head and the ears, or does it also include the goblet that it goes in? Like
Yes.
Now I'm curious about how that is. I would probably do that for Cookie Puss. If I get
Cookie Puss. Cookie Opus.
All right, I'll do a couple more here.
Pat and Ian, Carlos from California. I had a quick question regarding restoring old games. I know in the past you guys have talked about how putting a freshly printed sticker on an NES game can destroy the value and can be used to deceive people. So I had a quick hypothetical I wanted to throw at you guys. If you had a copy of Dinosaur Peak and the back sticker was just obliterated, I'm sure you'd agree it's unethical to swap that back plate with one from a different NES game. But let's say you had two copies of Dinosaur Peak, one with a good front label and one with a good back sticker. Is it unethical to swap these parts around so that you have a good copy and a bad copy?
No.
Is there any wiggle room since it's the
I don't
same
think that
game?
I don't think that's bad, and I don't think
before, because they're materially the same thing.
Materially the same. It's not a reproduction of it. It's the back is the same. It's the same. It doesn't matter. The sticker itself is unique.
Yeah. The back sticker actually changes. There's about, I want to say, five to eight different stickers. So like Dinosaur Peak's a good example. That sticker's a later one, so it's a lot more written on it. So that you'd have to find the same back to that. But overall, I wouldn't care about that.
No, neither would I.
It's the same. I mean, it's just that they pump them out in the factory next, you know what I mean, next to each other. Just, I wouldn't care about that.
My problem is it always comes right down to reproductions. And once you put a reproduction on there, you've already, you can do it, but people need to know about it. And you've already, I mean, it's not the real label.
And plus they look worse. So I
have yet to see a good reproduction label.
All right, we'll do two more here. This is a closer one here for you.
Hey guys, this is Joe from Niagara Falls, New York. Just had a quick question for Ian. Growing up in Buffalo, did you ever come to Niagara Falls? Did you have any memories of going to any restaurants or places that you'd like to go here? Thanks.
Yeah, we definitely used to go to Niagara Falls. It's like 25 minutes away. I don't think people realize how close the falls actually are to Buffalo. You can be there in no time. I think my favorite memory of the falls, and they don't do it anymore, but they used to do it was called the Festival of Lights. And they would do it in Niagara Falls, in the main downtown area, near the bridge, or near the Peace Bridge. And it was just a summer festival that they would do where all these buildings would get decked out in like crazy Christmas lights. There was a garden you could walk around inside. There was buildings with that you could go into that had like the animatronic displays. And it was just this big, it was just this big Christmas.
It was a big Dean?
Yeah. It was just a big Christmas. Phone. That's what you get. It was a big Christmas display. And I used to love doing it. And there was another one called the Festival of Trees, which was indoors. And there was tons and tons of Christmas trees decorated. And I have really, really fond memories of that when I was a kid. And honestly, when I think of Niagara Falls, that's big, just kind of what I think of. So, yeah.
All right, one more. We have an update on the website here, Ian.
The Rainbow Bridge, not the Peace Bridge. Anyway.
Yeah. Update. The Intellivision Amico FAQ is pretty much ready to go. I just wanted you guys to hear it first, because you know you're my favorite people. So here we go. Number one, what's the actual release date for the Amico? Answer, December 31st, 2021, at exactly 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, just before the ball drops in Times Square. Number two, can I use the coins from the game boxes to do my laundry? Answer, anything is possible, smiley face. Number three, is the Space Strikers game based on the 90s animated series of the same name? Answer, if you want it to be. Number four, when can we expect an update on Earthworm Jim? Answer, thank you for your interest. Number five, if I endorse the Amico, will you plug my YouTube channel even if I strangle kittens on it? Answer, Intellivision absolutely does not condone that behavior. But yes, that should cover it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. We know what's going to be in the FAQ.
Yeah, that's good. It's great.
Kitten stranglers, you know, talk to Tommy. He'll still push you. There you go.
They need every last minute of this year to get it out on time.
Every last second?
Mm-hmm.
They have to go to like the Hawaiian time zone, the very last one, or whatever it is, somewhere in the Pacific.
Well,
is that it for the podcast?
That's it for this podcast. We did all right.
We did all right for having a paltry menu of items.
This was like you know the cartoons where like you know the mice are like splitting up a can of beans, or they're like
they're cutting up one bean.
Yeah, that's what this felt like with content. But we made it happen.
We're professionals, Ian. We're professionals.
We got stuffed on the beans.
We got stuffed on the beans?
We got stuffed on the beans. We turned it into a meal.
Okay, we got stuffed on the beans. Put two metaphors together there.
All right. Stuff your beans.
All right, we'll see you. If you want to hear us talking about some movies, go to patreon.com/podcast.
Yeah, do it.
And we'll see you there. Bye, everyone.
Bye.